Well, good morning again. It's very good to see everyone. Again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. I guess it's been over a year now that I used to preach part-time over in Radcliffe. There's a congregation there. Every other weekend I would in the evening. I did that for kind of 2-3 years maybe. Anyhow, for time constraints and us having a baby and all that and all sorts of other reasons, I haven't been able to do preaching as often as I once did, but I still appreciate the opportunity whenever I can, and I hope that with any of those times, that anything I say, anything that I do, that it will be encouraging to you all, that it might help us all to think about some things that will better our lives as Christians. If you would, go ahead and turn to Judges chapter 6 this morning. This morning I'd like to talk to us for a little bit about Gideon, the judge Gideon, and I think a lot of us certainly understand Gideon and the different things that he is known for. And I think most often when we think of Gideon, we know of that great battle. We know how he led 300 men and how he had the pitchers with the torches in them, and they shattered them and shouted all at the same time. And through that and the help of God, that they were able to defeat countless of those who had invaded their land. So he is known for his great bravery, his great courage, his great faith in God for this great thing that he did for the people of Israel. But despite the fact that that's what he's most often known for, as is often the case with many, as we call them, Bible heroes, we understand that they're not always like that, are they? They aren't always great and courageous. They aren't always the ones that you would necessarily think to be the most faithful. When we look at some of them, it seems a bit obvious. Whenever we look at men such as Daniel, and how from the very beginning he seemed to be a very intelligent and faithful man, and we expect great things out of someone like him. And to some extent, David. He started out as a shepherd, but when we hear of what type of shepherd he was, we saw that he was able to kill a lion and a bear as a young man, and how he was able to defeat Goliath. And so when we see things like that, we expect great things out of men such as them. And when they rise to the occasion, and they become, as David became a great king, as Daniel became a great prophet and a great influence, even in a foreign land, we expect those sorts of things. And with Gideon, as I said, we often think of him for the great deed that he did in delivering his people of Israel. But when we look at the beginning of his life, we see that we wouldn't have necessarily expected great things out of him, and yet they came nonetheless. And so to set up this introduction to Gideon, I want us to see, first of all, the situation that Israel is in at this time. We understand that in the time of the judges, that they went through this constant cycle. The people of Israel, they would be faithful for a while, and then things would get good for them, and they'd decide, you know, we're fine, we don't need God. They would turn to idol worship or just forsaking God in general, and they would lapse back into their sinful nature. And it is at that time God would bring in some foreign nation, the Midianites as it will be in this case, to oppress these people. And after a short while they would realize we need God, they need God in their lives, and he'd send a deliverer. And the cycle would continue. And the cycle has done so for several decades now here. Prior to this, prior to Judges chapter 4, they've had rest for 40 years. But we see that now it will change. Let's read Judges chapter 1, chapter 6, verse 1 through 6. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian overpowered Israel. And because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves the dens that are in the mountains, and the caves and the strongholds. For whenever the Israelites planted crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come against them. They would encamp against them and devour the produce of the land, as far as Gaza, and leave no sustenance in Israel, and no sheep or ox or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents. They would come like locusts in number. Both they and their camels could not be counted, so that they laid waste the land they came in. And Israel was brought very low because of Midian, and the people of Israel cried out for help to the Lord. As I said, this is a cycle that continues, but there's something a little bit different this time. This time, it's even worse for the people of Israel. They've had some hard times. They've had some oppression. They've had some persecution. But they've never had anything this bad thus far. Here, they have resorted to hiding in the mountains, hiding in the dens and the caves and the strongholds in those mountains. And even their own crops, they could not reliably count on having food there available for them. Because whenever they were able to have those things, these Midianites and others would come in and destroy and take everything. Things are very difficult. As it says in verse 6, the people of Israel brought very low because of Midian. And so they called out to him for help. And God, being the loving and merciful God that He is, He's going to answer them. He's going to give them a deliverer. He's going to send them someone to deliver them from these Midianites and restore them to the great nation that they are. But let's see what type of man this is that God has chosen. Beginning in verse 11, we are introduced to him. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abizriite, while his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. Now let's pause here. We'll learn some more about him, but let's just stop and look at this first picture we're allowed to see of this man Gideon, whose God has chosen to deliver them. What is he doing? Is he in some war room trying to get people roused up to go out and to fight them head on? Is he a great man out in the streets trying to instigate a rebellion of, you know, we don't need to tolerate this anymore. We need to go out and fight. Nor is he any great prophet that's out there trying to restore people saying, you need to repent. You need to turn to God. We've seen that prophet. We didn't read it, but verse 8 through 10 of this chapter, there's a prophet out there who's been warning them and telling them these things. But Gideon is no such man. We see he's hiding in a wine press, and he's beating out wheat, hiding from the Midianites. Now, as we've seen the situation they're in, it's understandable why someone will be hiding. He could be killed for such a thing. So we understand why he's hiding, and yet, when we think of great men of valor, as God will describe him very shortly, we don't necessarily think of a man who's hiding in a wine press, who's just simply harvesting wheat or beating out wheat, as it says. And yet this is who God has chosen to approach. Verse 12, and the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. And Gideon said to him, please, sir, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted to us, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and given us into the hand of Midian. And the Lord turned to him and said, go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do not I send you? And he said to him, please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. We'll read on shortly, but here we truly see what type of man Gideon really is. He is no great man, not in his own stature at least, not in his own eyes and not in the eyes of many others. As we start at the end here in verse 15, he says, not only am I of the weakest clan in Manasseh, but I'm the weakest of that weakest clan. In other words, this was Gideon saying, I'm a nobody. I'm not important. Why is it that you are coming to me, Lord? And I can't help but wonder, in verse 12, God called him, or the angel of the Lord called him a mighty man of valor. You know, I've often wondered, you know, did Gideon kind of look around and see, surely he's not talking to me, is he? Me, a mighty man of valor? That is what God referred to him as. That is who he chose. Now, we'll get to that later, but we understand that God looks at things other than just simply their physical attributes, how strong or great or intelligent they are. And so when God looked to him, he called him a mighty man of valor. And this is who he has chosen. But I want to point something out. When we see other men who are greatly known for their faith and their trust in God, whenever we see Abraham, for example, God approaches him and says, get up, take your possessions, take your family, and leave. I'll show you a land. He didn't specify, it's right here, you've seen it, you know what it is. He just says, get up and go, I'll show you a land. What did Abram do? He got up and he left. He didn't question anything. And later on, at the time when he was called upon to sacrifice his son Isaac, he didn't sit there and try to bargain with God and say, are you sure? I'm not sure about this. He got up early in the morning and he went to sacrifice. No questions whatsoever. But what was Gideon's response? It wasn't even, we understand that his response was, why me? But he went even further than that. He says, in verse 12, God, the angel of the Lord said, the Lord is with you. In verse 13, look at his first response. If the Lord is with us, why is this happening to us? He questions God. He says, God's not with us. If God was with us, why would this be happening? So we see something very different. It wasn't an immediate response of great faith on the behalf of Gideon. His immediate response was, what do you mean God is with us? If he was, these sort of things would not be happening. And so we must call to question at this time, and we'll get to this at the very end of the sermon, why did God choose Gideon? I want you to think about that throughout this sermon. Why did God choose Gideon? He could have chosen, maybe there was that man who was trying to figure out, how can we rebel against these people? How can we come out ahead? It could have been maybe that prophet who was trying to convince the people to do what's right. Why didn't God choose any of those types of men? Why did he choose this least man of the least clan in the tribe of Israel, whose first response when being called a mighty man of valor is, if God's with us, why is this sort of thing happening? And secondly, some of this for sake of time, I won't be able to elaborate on everything, but I think some of these things are very important. And one of the things that's important is note what God's response is. When he says, if God's with us, why is this happening? What about those great deeds? What about all that stuff I've heard about? In verse 14, God just simply says, go. Go in this night of yours. He doesn't answer him. He doesn't sit down and reason with him and say, no, Gideon, you don't understand. God has truly been here. It is you who have left him, or your people that have left him. If you go, I'll help you. He just says, no, Gideon, just go. I will be with you. That is God's response to him. And we see, though, beginning in verse 17, after they've had this discussion, and God, or the Lord tells him once again, I'll be with you, you shall strike them. In verse 17, he said to him, if now I have found favor in your eyes, then show me a sign that it is you who speak with me. Please do not depart from here until I come to you and bring out my present and set it before you. And he said, I will stay till you return. Now again, let's pause and think about what's truly happening here. I've called to mind men such as Abraham. When God approached them and told them what to do, they got up and they did it. They didn't say, wait, God, I need proof it's really you. I need you to show me a sign. So we see yet again that Gideon, at this point in time, we have no reason to see him as a great man of faith. Because his response, his first response is, what do you mean God is with us? His second response is, what do you mean you're going to use me? I'm nobody. And his third response after being told, go again, is, okay, well, if it's truly you, I want proof. I want to see a sign. Him asking God that. So again, I call the question, why is it that God chose Gideon, of all people? He is no man of faith. Now, for sake of time, I won't read the exact sign that it was. He went, basically, he said, I'll go bring this present, I'll set it before you. So he went out and he prepared this mead and unleavened bread and this broth, and he brought it before the angel of the Lord, poured it on this rock. The angel stuck out the staff, it immediately caught on fire, and the angel vanished. Now, then Gideon got very scared because he knew this is serious. This isn't just some man coming up and talking to me. He understood it is the angel of the Lord. And in verse 23, and the Lord said to him, peace be to you. Do not fear, you shall not die. Gideon understood what was happening here and was afraid that he was going to die because he finally knew for certain who it was he was talking to. Let's step back a moment. I brought up the fact that he asked for a sign. He asked God for a sign. You know what God could have done? God could have said, you know what? I'll find someone who's not going to ask so many questions. I'll find someone who's not going to tell me they need a sign. I'm going to find someone who has enough faith that I don't have to do this kind of stuff for them. But what did God do? God was patient with him, and he performed this sign in order that he might have faith and in order that he might know that it truly is God. A very great thing that God did for him. Now, God, before he gives him this task of going and doing this great deed of delivering everyone from the Midianites, he has another task for him first, and that is in verse 25. That night the Lord said to him, take your father's bull, and the second bull, 7 years old, and pull down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the Asherah that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on the top of the stronghold here, with stones laid in due order. Then take the second bull and offer it as a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah that you shall cut down. So Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had told him. But because he was too afraid of his family and the men of the town to do it by day, he did it by night. So God gives him a test of his faith and says, go and tear down these altars and build a sacrifice and offer it to me. That is his first test of faith. What was Gideon's response? He did it, but he was afraid. He was not going to do it. He did it by night. And he took others with him. Which is yet a second thing. God didn't, I'm not necessarily saying it was wrong for Gideon to bring others, but God didn't specify, hey, go get some of your friends and come do this. He told him to do it. Gideon, perhaps he needed company. Perhaps he was afraid and needed help there. Regardless, he brought on others, and we can say for certainty he was afraid to the point that he did it by night. A small step in the right direction, but it is a step nonetheless. He is beginning to build his faith. He's doing what God has asked him to do. And yet he is still afraid. And he was afraid of his family and the men of his town. Let's see what happens here in verse 28. When the men of the town rose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down, and the shear beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar that had been built. And they said to one another, who had done this thing? And after they searched and inquired, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing. Then the men of the town said to Joash, bring out your son, that he may die, for he has broken down the altar of Baal, and has cut down the shear beside it. But Joash said to all who stood against him, will you contend for Baal, or will you save him? Whoever contends for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because his altar has been broken down. Therefore on that day Gideon was called Jerubbaal, that is to say, let Baal contend against him, because he broke down his altar. We see that despite his efforts, we don't know how, but everyone found out Gideon is the one who did this. And this could have been an opportunity that Gideon could have been killed for it. These people were so angry. And yet I believe this was an opportunity to build his faith. For one, he was willing to go out and do that. But God demonstrates to him, this doesn't happen the way you think it's going to happen, Gideon. You're not going to die. Your family is not going to kill you. His family stood beside him. The very person he was afraid of is the one who stood up for him and didn't just stand up and say, leave him alone, it's my son. He stands up boldly and says, look, if anyone stands for Baal, we will put him to death by morning. So God has demonstrated to Gideon that despite his fear, despite the fact he has no great faith, his family will stand with him. His family will be there with him to help him do these great things. And they stood up for him in this instant. So now he is ready, it seems. He is ready to go out in the face of the Midianites. And God is about to prepare him. And I think this is something very important and very interesting that I noticed. Let's look at verse 33 and see what happens. Now all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and they crossed the Jordan and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. These Midianites and Amalekites and all these people of the east, they're ready for war. And it doesn't say they sent out a small band or a raiding party. All of them, everyone came out. As we'll see later and as we've seen before, they were described as numerous, as countless, as numerous as the sands of the seashore, was how just their camel riders alone were described. This great number of people. They're in trouble. Yet God does something in response. And what does he do? Does he send out all the people of Israel, and the Egyptians come and join them, and all these other nations come and join them, and they outnumber them? Is that what happens? God's response in verse 34, but the Spirit of the Lord clothed Gideon. That is God's response. You have all this great army, these great nations, they've come forth, they're ready to battle. In human terms, we would think God needs a huge army. God's simple response was, he took his Spirit of the Lord and he put it upon Gideon. There's a few things. We'll talk about applications towards the end, but here's an application right here. That is how powerful the Spirit of the Lord is. That's all God had to do in response to this great army, is take the Spirit of the Lord and put it upon Gideon in response. It is the same Spirit of the Lord that we have been blessed with. And so let's keep that in mind, that is how powerful God's Spirit truly is. And in verse 34, he sounded the trumpet, and the Bezerites were called out to follow him. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, and they too were called to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali, and they went up to meet him. And so here we have Gideon, who considered himself a nobody. Now he has the Spirit of the Lord upon him, and now he has followers. So we see his faith has improved to the extent he tore down the altar. He sees that his family is with him. He sees that his father stood up to him to the point he was going to kill anyone who worshipped Baal. He has the Spirit of the Lord upon him. A great gift indeed. And now he has followers. He has great people to form an army and to go out and to fight these people. Now, if we just stop there, we would think, Gideon's ready. He's understanding. He knows what's going on now. But some of us may understand where Gideon truly is at this point in time. Let's see what his thoughts are, beginning in verse 36. Then Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, behold, I'm laying a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece alone, and it is dry on the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." And it was so, when he rose early next morning and squeezed the fleece, he wrung enough dew from the fleece to fill the bowl with water. We see Gideon, he still doesn't truly believe, does he? Because you just look at the way he's talking here. If you will save this land, as you have said. He recognizes God has said it. This wasn't a matter of, God, I wanted to make sure I had this right. Did you say you're going to save Israel through me? He knows what God's already said. But he's saying, if you actually do this, please show me a sign. And then I shall know that you will save me as you've already said. I mean, think of the nerve of this guy. I mean, he's coming to God saying, God, I know what you've told me. You've already shown me one sign that I asked for. I need one more sign. Then I'll understand. I mean, this is no great faith. Even despite all the other things that he's had, Gideon is still questioning God. And we see that it doesn't even stop here. We see that God, like I mentioned before, he could have said, what's wrong with him? I've done everything I can for him and he still doesn't believe. God could have still found someone else. But he was patient with Gideon. And he took another step with him and blessed him and said, okay, I'll show him this sign. You would think that would be enough, wouldn't you? Verse 39. Then Gideon said to God, let not your anger burn against me. Let me speak just once more. Please let me test just once more with the fleece. Please let it be dry on the fleece only, and on all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night. And it was dry on the fleece only, and on all the ground there was dew. And so, yet a third time. I mean, think of how many people in the course of the entire history of this world have seen a sign. In the time of Christ, obviously, quite a few did. But as a whole, there are very, very, very few people who have seen a sign. Now, take that a step further. How many people have asked God, God, show me a sign? And that is how they've seen a sign. Take it a step further. How many people have done that twice? And yet here Gideon has done this three times now as he requested God to show me a sign. And so again, we call the question, why did God choose Gideon? Why did God not choose a great man of faith? Why did he choose a man who thought so lowly of himself and was so humble and had such little faith in himself and such little faith in God, it seems? Well, let's continue on to see what happens. Verse 1. Then Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him rose early and encamped beside the spring of Harod. And the camp of Midian was north of them, by the hill of Morah in the valley. The Lord said to Gideon, the people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast over me, saying, my own hand has saved me. Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead. Then 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained. Now, a couple of things here. First off, this is already a small number. 32,000 sounds like quite a bit, but remember, the Midianites are countless, numerous as the sands of the seashore. So even 32,000 are nothing in comparison to what they're about to face. And yet God says, it's too many. If you win this battle, you'll say, I did it because I was smart or intelligent or I was strong enough. So he says, send some of them home. And 22,000 return. And what does God say now in verse 4? And the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. Take them down to the water and I will test them for you there. We'll skip the actual test itself, but I think we remember what it was about drinking the water and God would indicate which ones were to stay. But how many does he keep? Verse 7, The Lord said to Midianite, with the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hand and let all the others go away, every man to his tent. So the people took provisions in their hands and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, but retained 300 men. And the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. He's gone from 32,000 men to 300. To put that in perspective, he has less than 1% of what he started with. And what he started with in human eyes was still nothing compared to what he was to fight against. And yet God has got them down to 300 men and said, okay, this is enough. I can save you with this many, and you will not boast of it. God is teaching him something here. And teaching, it's not strength in numbers. It's not how great and how powerful and how courageous they are. It's me that is going to save you. We'll talk about this more then, but I think now we may be starting to see, why did God choose Gideon as opposed to some great and powerful and strong and courageous man? I think we're starting to see why at this point. And yet now we see in verse 9, the time has come. Verse 9, that same night the Lord said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Purah your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward your hand shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. Now if we continue reading, Gideon said, okay, and he charged out to battle and he won, didn't he? No, he didn't. He still was not certain. He was still afraid. At the end of verse 11, he takes God up on his offer. He went down with Purah, his servants, to the outposts of the armed men who were in the camp. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay among the valley like locusts in abundance. And their camels were without number, as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance. This line I've been referring to. Verse 13, when Gideon came, behold, a man was telling a dream to his comrade. And he said, behold, I dreamed a dream. And behold, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian and came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat. His comrade answered, this is none other than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, the man of Israel. God has given into his hand Midian and all the camp. As soon as Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped, and he returned to the camp of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord has given the host of Midian into your hand. Let's understand, he's in the camp of the Midianites here. He's in the camp of his enemies. So there's a few things going on here. First off, God is demonstrating his protection of Gideon, and that Gideon and his servant have safely gone down into a camp that is numerous, without count. Numerous is the sand of the seashore, and God has protected him to go into this camp and infiltrate it. And yet he doesn't go there and he finds some weakness in their army or anything like that. He goes and sees that God has another sign for him. A man has had a dream. And there's something unique about this. It wasn't as if Gideon interpreted the dream. An Israelite, a prophet of God, came and interpreted the dream. It was one of the Midianites, the enemy themselves, who interpreted the dream and said, this is Gideon. This is Gideon that God has brought up against us, and he will defeat us. He will defeat Midian. So we see that, lower this just a little bit. We see that even his enemies are afraid of him. So let's backtrack a little bit and see who all is on Gideon's side at this time. We see God obviously is on his side. We see his family is on his side. We see 300 men. He was able to get 32,000 men to follow him. 32,000 men were on his side. God demonstrates through these various signs that 300 men is all he needs. So he has 300 men on his side. And even his enemies, in a sense, are on his side because they believe they're going to lose. Look at all the things that God has done for him all along this way. God could have at any point in time have decided this man's faith is so weak, he doesn't deserve this. But God, every step of the way, walked with Gideon, helped him, showed him signs, built his confidence, built his courage, built his faith, did all of these great things. And now finally, Gideon is convinced. And in verse 15, as I already read, he said, arise, for the Lord has given the host of Midian into your hand. Now, for sake of time and for sake of familiarity, I won't necessarily read the specific what happened. We understand he took these, they had these pitchers, and they put torches in them, and they were hidden. And whenever the time came, he told them that what will happen. In verse 18, he says, I'll blow the trumpet. Everyone shall, you know, shatter the pitchers and show the torches, and they shall shout for the Lord and for Gideon. And continuing on, verse 19 and 20, we see that that is exactly what happened. That they went out, they blew the trumpets, they shattered the jars, the torches were in their hands, and they shouted. And every man went out to fight, all 300 of them. In verse 22, we see the result of it. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. And the army fled as far as Beth Shittah towards Arira, and as far as the border of Abel Meholah Batabath. And if we were to read on, we see that they defeated all of them. Numerous, countless people were running from 300 men. And we see that Gideon led them to victory. And they were victorious. At the very end of 25, they captured the two princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the Mount of Oreb, and Zeb they killed at the winepress of Zeb. Then they pursued Midian, and they brought back the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon across the Jordan. A great victory. There's a couple of things I want to point out here. One, to appreciate what's going on. It seems a little bit odd. Why was it such a big deal that they shatter their pitchers and 300 torches sets this great panic? Now, there's two reasons for it. One, and the greatest reason, is in verse 22. The Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. So we see it wasn't these great, powerful 300 men. God set the swords of the Midianites against each other. So this was a miracle. But secondly, one of the ways that this fear was achieved was, if we understood the way battles took place back then, not every soldier had a torch. I mean, if every single soldier was carrying a torch, I mean, what about their sword, their shield, their bow, all sorts of other things? Only the commanders of the army had a torch. And so when they shattered these pitchers, and the other army looked out and saw 300 torches out there, what they thought it was 300 commanders. And if you've got 300 commanders, how many men must they have behind them? So that would have been partially impacted these men and caused them to be afraid. But again, in verse 22, we see that it was the Lord who set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. And so now we've arrived to this great deed. This is what Gideon is known for. He's known for this moment of bravery, of courage, of faith, where he went out and he did what God asked him to do, and he was successful. He delivered his people. And yet now we arrive to the question that I begin with. Why Gideon? You know, why would God choose this man? Why would God not choose someone who, like Abram, would have immediately got up and said, all right, I'll go and do anything that you say. Like Abram when he sacrificed his son Isaac. Like David, like Daniel, like Isaiah, all the great men of the Old Testament and the New Testament. Why Gideon, of all people, who was a man who was a nobody, as he called himself, didn't think anything of himself, was in hiding, said that if God's with us, after being told God is with you, said, if God's with us, why is all this happening? Why Gideon? I believe there's two answers to that question. I think the one is what I hinted at already. Back in chapter 7 and verse 22, we see that God told him the people were too many, lest Israel should boast, saying, my hand has saved me. If God had chosen a great commander, a great leader, a man who was strong and brave and courageous, maybe capable of performing great miracles, they may have been inclined to look and say, hey, Gideon saved us. Gideon is the one who did this. And that's not what God wanted. So to prevent that from happening, God chose a man that no one would look up to, that no one would look at and say, I want to be like him. No children would say, I want to be like him when I grow up. He's a nobody. I believe that is one reason why God chose Gideon. And I think that's the most obvious one, because that is the way God functions many times, isn't it? I mean, I've talked about there are many great and powerful and courageous men. But think about all the other people that God has chosen throughout time that were not necessarily of any importance. Think about many of the apostles were simply fishermen. Nobody respected a fisherman. Some of them were tax collectors. Everyone hated tax collectors. And yet it is those men that God chose to demonstrate his great power and love and generosity through men who otherwise would not be respectable. I believe that is why God chose Gideon. Yet there's another piece to this that I want to present for us. And that is, I believe he chose Gideon as a way to help Gideon. He could have chosen a man whose faith would not have changed throughout this way, who at the very beginning had great faith in God, at the very end had great faith in God, and it was just another day in his life to save these men. And yet Gideon was blessed with this opportunity. God was patient with him and was loving with him and cared for him and showed him all of these signs and walked along with Gideon in order to help him, in order to bless him, in order that Gideon's faith might be strengthened, and that he might truly understand that God is with him. Despite what he said at the beginning, God is with him. And that's all he really needs, isn't it? But God demonstrated so much more to him and showed, your family is with you. These men are with you. Even your enemies believe in you. He did this, and Gideon greatly benefited from it. So why did he choose Gideon? I believe that is the two reasons. Now, for a point of application, there's a couple things. One, I think it's important that when we look at these men in the Old Testament, we believe understand this, but sometimes we have a, not necessarily that we idolize them, but sometimes we think them as being greater men than they actually were. Even Abraham at times had difficulties and struggles. They were all men just like we are, and Gideon just like we had his struggles. And yet specifically in Gideon's case, I think oftentimes we find ourselves in that situation, don't we? Maybe we're faced with a task and we don't think we can accomplish it. Maybe we think, let's just use for an example of teaching someone the gospel, and we think, I can't do as good as this person or this preacher or that teacher. This isn't for me. And so we use those excuses and think that we just can't do it. Like Gideon, God can help us. God can do that for us. And it is not because of our great power and our great strength, but just like it was for Gideon, it's because of God and His power. We just have to acknowledge that and allow Him to be, or allow ourselves to do those things, because we know that God is with us. So let's never question that. No matter what situation we're in, if we're feeling down or discouraged, let's always realize that God can accomplish great things through us. God can do great things through us. But we must show our faith. We must be willing to take that step. For Gideon, his first step was a very small step. And while I don't want to encourage we do as little as we can to get by, if we're questioning whether or not, you know, we're capable of doing something, if we just conclude we're not and we don't do anything, we're never going to accomplish anything. If we just take that first step, though, maybe even just a small step, it may lead to great things, just as it did with Gideon. Who knows what may happen? But if we don't take that step, we'll never know. And so I encourage you all to please have this faith that Gideon built up to. And if at this point in your life you're at where Gideon began and your faith is wavering and you're not certain, you don't know what it is you can do in this life, realize that, take that step. Have faith in God and do what it is that He is asking you to do. So if you're not a Christian, take that step and become a Christian. If you are a Christian and you're wavering, your faith is wavering, again, take that step. Have faith in God and do the work, do the things that He has called you to do and has asked you to do and requires of us all. Whatever it is in your life, make sure that you're doing what's right. Make sure that you're right with God. Let's all think on these things as we stand and sing together.